From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of October 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the U.S. inflation rate has unexpectedly slowed, and that's not necessarily a good thing. China's Sinochem has decided not to make a bid for Canada's potash corporation, and NGFA is urging governmental regulators not to change spec position limits for agricultural commodities. Dave Dickey will be here with all the details of these stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkas, and Steve Hilberg will be here to explore the agricultural weather forecast as we round out this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby December wheat up 3 3/4 at 7.04 1/2. The March at 7.40 3/4, 4 cents higher. And July at 7.65 1/4, up 9. Hard red in Kansas City, 4 1/2 cents higher at $7.45 for this Friday afternoon. Corn pit December contract 4.63, down 4 1/4 for the day. March at 5.75, 3 1/2 lower. The May at 5.80 3/4, down 2 3/4. July at 5.82 1/2, down 1 1/3. And next year's December corn at $5.16 3/4, 2 3/4 lower. November soybeans, $11.85, down 3 1/2 cents. January at $11.95 3/4, down 3 1/4. March at $12.35, down 3 3/4. And the May at $12.04 3/4, down 4 cents for the day. Next year's November, 5 1/2 lower at $11.47 1/4. Bean meal down $3.50. Bean oil down 25 cents. Mercantile exchange numbers, October feeders at 108.75, up 65. Live cattle at 98.15, $2.07 1/2 higher. And December lean hogs at 68.90, a nickel higher. This is IPM. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, 81.25, down $1.45 a barrel. Ethanol at 2.22 1/10. That finished 1 1/2 cents higher for the day. And natural gas at 3.53 1/10, down 12 6/10 cents. Heating oil trading $2.23 even, just about 0.05 cents lower. And the gold futures at $1,371.10, down $5.60 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 42 points lower now at 11,053. And the dollar at 77.05 is 0.39 higher on the day. The CRB index at 296.06 is down 3.8 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for a Friday. They say sunny skies, a high near 66 today. Northwest winds between 11 and 13, gusting to 18 miles an hour tonight. Clear, a low of just 39 degrees. Winds out of the north at 5 to 8 miles an hour. For Urbana-Champaign on Saturday, it'll be sunny, a high near 72 degrees. South-southwest winds between 5 and 14, gusting to 17. And Saturday night, mostly clear skies, a low of 44 degrees. On Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny, a high near 69. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 47. And then on Monday, a 30% chance of showers. Partly sunny skies after that, a high near 66 degrees. Monday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a low of 41. And Tuesday, partly sunny, the high near 63. When we get out to Tuesday night, partly cloudy, the low of 40 degrees. Wednesday, partly sunny, a high of 62. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, the low of 39. And on Thursday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high near 65 degrees.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the U of I in Urbana-Champaign. On the phone line with us from West Lafayette and Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, what a week, another week. What a week again we had in the marketplace, and we gapped higher, sharply higher, and we actually managed to stay above that all week, though we lost some of it today and a bit earlier in the week. What did you think of the corn market?
I would have liked to have frozen the market at about 12:45 Chicago time today, because that was when we started to see the wheat turn around and we had seen some profit-taking by the spreaders. They were unwinding corn-wheat spreading, Todd, about that time. Wheat was up double digits. Corn and beans were starting to come on, and that was what we really wanted to see going into the end of the week after the wheat has been pretty much pulling the corn down. Beans have fought it off, you know, pretty much by themselves and very, very successfully because of the great demand we continue to see, most notably out of China for the soy complex. But I think overall we went into the week thinking that the demand was going to be very, very good, that the end users were going to be picking up a lot, and we didn't see that as much as the trade was probably expecting on both the weekly export inspections and the weekly export sales. So I think between that and the idea that there's a little bit more export competition surfacing in the form of Argentine corn exports again and the Ukrainian Feed Association wanting the government to up the Ukrainian grain exports for the end of the year, going into the end of the year. I think that was probably the things that really were on the traders' minds as we closed out the week.
Now, let's take a closer look at the soybeans. A high this week on the week at $12.04 in the November, the low at $11.15 3/4. They settled at $11.85 in that November contract. It was up 50 cents on the week. Everything in that pit was above 12 bucks today, but the November and the January both finished with 11s in front of them. Does it worry you at all?
Well, I would have liked to have seen a high, a close above this earlier week's highs of 11.95 and a half. From a short-term technical perspective, it is a worry in that respect that we weren't able to push the envelope, because we did close above that level in the Globex trade. We should have been able to do that today, and we're on our way to do that until the dollar turned around. So, yes, that is a flag that has to be watched. Now, does it mean anything if Mato Grosso misses their rains that they're expected this week and early next week? No. In my view, if they miss those rains, the Mato Grosso just came across the wires with fresh planting progress numbers, about 6.7% planted right now versus 22, almost 22.5% planted last year at this time. So if we miss these weekend rains and we go back into not planting, you're probably missing that window of optimum yield at that stage, because you're going to slow down on your planting again and push you into a bigger, you know, time period where the hotter, drier weather and seasonality of that weather pattern down there starts to take effect. And the trade's probably going to price that in right away. So it could mean a lot if the weather stays bearish in terms of that lower close. But it may mean absolutely nothing. We're just in a weather market in Brazil.
Yeah, we're in a weather market in Brazil. It seems like we're in a weather market across the globe, and we're in the front end of everybody's season at this point. It's kind of strange, but Dickie and I were talking about this just before we came on the air and what things looked like around the globe. Yesterday, Pete Levitt, meteorologist, or a week ago, Pete Levitt, meteorologist, told us that Ukraine and Russia were still tough, that he thought that they might turn cold faster than they should, and that would be rough on whatever crop they have on the ground. They only have half, I think, of what they normally would put in the ground at this time for winter wheat there.
Mm-hmm.
There are some thoughts that we might have some problems in early problems. It's tough to say when you're this early in South America, but the market really just says we're really jittery about the size of the supply of all our grains and oil seeds at this point.
And that makes perfect sense given the USDA reports. I mean, what we talked about right after the report was the lack of excess supply is going to put the weather at the very top of the list, and that's going to increase the volatility. The big thing that I've been looking at this week and what I've been trying to answer all week long is, and the key question is, what feeds the bull until the next USDA report, especially if you don't have the export demand or you don't have any sense of, or you have the sense that maybe export competition is coming like we saw this week. And what feeds the bull until the next USD report if the gold-led rally stops and the emerging markets turn lower because we found a bottom in the dollar? The dollar did give some pretty strong buy signals going into this close today. Well, the answer naturally is to that question is weather. If you can't feed the demand bull and you can't feed the gold emerging market fund-led rally, then you really need the weather on your side. And because our supplies are so tight, the weather could probably pull the freight by itself, but it puts you in more of a precarious situation going into next week. If you have follow-through upside to the dollar, follow-through downside to the gold, you don't see great weekly export inspections, and then all of a sudden Mato Grosso does get some really good rains, then you start to see a little bit more questioning, I think, by the trade of whether they want to hold these levels or maybe retrace back down, go back down towards this week's weekly lows, which are quite a bit, you know, below the market at this stage.
A confusing and volatile point than we are in the marketplace. What do you tell your producers about making sales for corn and soybeans?
I have to say the producers are right on the mark right now because they've come out of the field, they see the prices, and I'm not kidding you, Todd, I bet I've had probably a dozen calls and personal meetings this week of clients saying, I don't want to let these high prices slip away in 2011. So we're working on marketing plans for 2011 right now. The biggest thing that I try and push forward is between the acreage battle, between this weather that we're talking about, and between the need to demand ration, and that rationing of demand typically takes more than 1-2 weeks. It takes a month or 2 months, possibly, to really slow down demand in a long-term fashion. Between those three things, that all points to the rally being in the front end. So if you're going to push the sales, whether it's off the combine sales as you're finishing up, whether it's commercially held production that you've got on DP for 7 days, or whether it's 2011 sales, my mindset is use this time period to defend those sales, because by the time we get to March, not only will you know your crop insurance price, but I think a lot of these uncertainties, you'll be able to check them off, and you'll be right back to the summertime weather market as your major potential move to the upside.
Okay, are you defending with options, and are you and are you wanting them to lock in, try to lock in fuel costs, seed cost, and anhydrous
fertilizer? Fuel costs when it comes to gasoline, but when it comes to diesel, I am not recommending that right now. I think we got to concentrate on the nitrogen, but leave the diesel alone. We should be turning back in the refining back towards the diesel and the distillates here now that we're moving into the winter blends. And if the dollar does bottom, I think that spells trouble for the crude oil and the unleaded gas. One of the things that's been troubling me for the last 3 months is if the government and the wise people in the economic realm want to really stimulate the economy, why don't they somehow get the gas prices down? Because as they go up here, all we're doing is being taxed more. So that I think that will start to work into the mindset of the trade a little bit more and the talking heads up there a little bit more. So I'm going to leave some of my energy wide open here.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Joins us each and every Friday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Hey, don't forget to visit willag.org. You can listen to Commodity Week there. It'll be posted after 6 this evening. Our guest will be Brian Hoops. Now here's Dave with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, U.S. inflation unexpectedly slowed in September despite a pickup in retail sales, keeping pressure on the Federal Reserve to act soon to lessen the risk of a downward price spiral. U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke today says high unemployment and low inflation point to a need for a further easing of U.S. monetary policy, but said policymakers were still weighing how aggressive they should be. Bernanke said a prolonged period of high unemployment could pose a risk to the recovery's sustainability, and he added the low level of inflation meant that the risk of a dangerous downward slide in prices was greater than desirable. The overall consumer price index rose by 0.1% in September and the core index, which excludes food and energy prices, remained unchanged for the second straight month. China's Sinochem Corporation has abandoned plans to make a rival offer for Potash Corporation as part of plans to spoil BHP's $39 billion bid for the Canadian fertilizer maker. Sinochem had hired Deutsche Bank and Citigroup to explore options to foil BHP's offer. China's main worry is that a BHP takeover of potash could push up the prices of potash, a nutrient essential for boosting grain production to meet booming food needs. A Sinochem spokesperson declined today to comment on its plans on whether it had withdrawn its efforts. The National Grain and Feed Association today says that U.S. futures regulators should keep its speculative position limits for agricultural commodities and be wary of granting exemptions to investment funds and financial players. The comments come as banks and funds lobby the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to be flexible in how the regulator applies new powers to curb speculation in futures and swaps markets. The NGFA says that the CFTC should make sure speculative investors do not circumvent limits by trading coordinated positions through separate entities. Walmart Stores is planning to double the sales of fresh produce it sources from local farms in its U.S. stores by the end of 2015. The world's largest retailer says it will also sell more than $1 billion each year in food sourced from 1 million small and medium-sized farms in emerging markets by the end of 2015. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. That second program you can hear on our website after about 6 o'clock this evening. We record at 4:30 and post it to willag.org before it ever airs on any radio station. That's at willag.org. Commodity Week is our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Up next in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says, corn, corn, and more corn.
Illinois' corn harvest is nearing the final stages, and according to the newest Illinois Agriculture Statistics Report, 87% of the corn crop has been harvested statewide. As our country celebrated Christopher Columbus Day and corn harvest wraps up, I think it is timely to talk about the history of corn and its many uses. When Christopher Columbus landed in North America in 1492, the Native Americans were growing six different kinds of corn: pod corn, popcorn, dent corn, flint corn, flower corn, and sweet corn. The Native Americans were expert farmers, and corn was an important part of their daily lives. As the Thanksgiving story goes, the Native Americans gave dried corn seeds to the pilgrims and taught them how to cultivate the corn plants for food. Since the time of the Native Americans and pilgrims, scientists and farmers have taken corn and developed many different varieties. It has taken hundreds of years for these plants to grow stronger and for ears to grow longer. Science, biotechnology, and plant breeding have all played an important role in improving the technology of the corn seed. In 2009, the United States raised 13 billion bushels of commercial or yellow dent corn. As in the days of the Native Americans and pilgrims, corn is also an important part of our daily lives. There are thousands of uses for it. When harvested, 60% of our corn is fed to livestock, including dairy cattle, beef cattle, swine, sheep, and poultry. Chickens and turkeys are the single largest consumers of corn. In addition to livestock feed, 9% of the corn is processed into food ingredients. Corn is processed for corn sweetener, corn meal, corn flour, corn oil, and corn starch. 6% of the corn is processed into everyday products like printing ink, soap, adhesives, batteries, laundry detergents, crayons, biodegradable plastics, and shoe polish. From one bushel of corn, we get many food and non-food products useful to man. Just as corn saved the pilgrims from starvation, corn continues to feed many hungry people throughout the world today. Corn, it is everywhere, every day. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. I've been asked a couple of times over the last week why so many fields are so green, and there is a good explanation. I bet Bruce Bostard knows it, too. He's up at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Great.
So the answer to that question is because?
Because the corn that was lost in combining has germinated, and it looks really nice out there.
It does look really nice. I had a discussion with Emerson Nafziger about that. He's an agronomist. He kind of thinks that there's a whole lot more corn out there than there has been in the past, simply because so much of the corn, and you can verify this probably from your area, came in such low moisture content that it didn't even make it into the combine. It hit the head and shattered, and then some of it went on the ground. Most of it went through the combine, but what was left has germinated and sprouted at this point.
Which isn't all bad. At least what germinates and sprouts now isn't a weed in a bean field next year. So now it's a green manure crop. So.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. What is a plant you want this year? Maybe a weed next year. Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about cash basis. You've settled down, I bet, up there, at least in what you've been bringing in. How's your basis acting?
It has been firming up on the front end. The deferreds are steady, not unexpectedly. As you wrap the crop up, we've taken the carry out a lot in the last 30, 40 days out here on the corn side. Beans is just starting that process. We're starting to see some of the nearby numbers improve a little bit and taking a little bit of carry out there. I think as we finish up harvest, we'll see some more.
And your expectation then for corn is to continue to tighten up?
A flat basis. You get to more of a demand-type market, you'd expect to see flat basis and not a lot of carry.
How far under are you at this point?
Right now we are at 20 under for nearby, but that tightens into a 16 under for December, and that 20 under is an October number. You probably pick several cents up just going to a November bill lading, and we're getting close to that.
And your bids for the day?
We are at 543 for nearby corn. Beans are 1150 nearby, 1181 for January.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. Out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
It's National Roast Pheasant Day. The pheasant was not native to the U.S., but rather was first imported in 1733. But it was not until 1881 when some 100 pairs of Chinese ring-necked pheasants were released in Oregon that the bird gained a foothold in America. On this day in agricultural history in 1874, child labor and child abuse issues caught public attention in the U.S., when a 9-year-old child named Mary Ellen was found in the home of her guardian suffering from malnutrition, serious physical abuse, and neglect. But there were no child laws on the books, So the court ruled against the Guardian turning to laws that regulate pets. Prosecutors argued Mary Ellen was a member of the animal kingdom. By the way, early attempts at child labor laws excluded agriculture. In 1889, Sir Daniel Gooch died, an American railway pioneer and inventor. He laid the first successful transatlantic cable, allowing telegraphic communication between the U.S. and Europe. And in 1930, Herbert Henry Dow died, an American chemist and industrialist. He was a pioneer in the U.S. chemical industry, and he founded the Dow Chemical Company. As a young man, Dow entered the fledgling chemical industry in the 1890s by inventing a method of extracting bromide from prehistoric brine trapped underground in Midland, Michigan. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Time for our end-of-the-week discussion of the agricultural weather market. On the phone line with us is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What did we look like for the week? Were we drier than normal, and what do you see for the weekend?
In general, we were drier than normal, but we did get some rain this week, surprisingly more than I think, at least I initially thought, with that front that came through on Wednesday. And unfortunately, the rain was rather limited to northeastern and eastern Illinois, but some areas got as much as 3/4 of an inch, which for October is pretty good. But overall, probably the more common amounts were 1/10 to maybe 3/10 of an inch. So some parts of Illinois got rain, and the far south got some rain this weekend, too, as that upper low lifted out of Arkansas early in the week and actually brought an inch or two of rain to some areas that have been extremely dry in far southern and southeastern Illinois. Otherwise, it's been fairly dry, and it looks like it's going to stay that way. We may have another shot at some rain on Monday, late Monday and early Tuesday, as another cold front goes through here. But again, moisture supplies are rather limited, so we're probably not going to see a lot, but we could see some showers around the area.
Yeah, are the mostly sunny skies bringing us higher than normal temperatures at this time of year?
Well, we are. We actually started out October rather chilly the first 5 to 7 days there, and then the last week has been rather warm. So the overall effect here has been to sort of warmer in the north, in northern Illinois, and near normal in the southern half of the state. But in general, it's been very warm the last week or so. We're going to be back toward more normal levels here for at least the next week to 10 days or so, which is looking at temperatures, high temperatures in the 60s and lows in the 40s. We'll see some 30s probably tonight and maybe even some scattered frost throughout parts of Illinois as a high moves over us. But then things will moderate just a bit as we go through the weekend.
Yeah, we'd like to see soil temperatures down around 50, 60 degrees or below to put anhydrous ammonia and nitrogen on. Have you actually looked at soil temperatures?
We don't have a large network of soil temperature sensors, and I haven't looked recently, but with the abundant sunshine we've had, we've probably not seen that move a lot, and with the warm weather this last week too. But as the days get shorter and the nights are colder, we should start seeing that temperature come down, and I'll try and remember to look at that for next week.
Okay, that's not a problem. I didn't warn you on it, and I kind of thought I'd like to know about it a little bit. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find this programming, all the rest of our agricultural programming you can listen to anytime you like. And Commodity Week, we'll record that at 4:30 this afternoon and post it to the website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.